Welcome to BridgeEd, the podcast brought to you by The Bridge here at Wellington College, where we'll be joined by a series of interesting guests to explore some of the most topical issues in the education sector. So, hey Kim, great to see you. Really great to have the opportunity to chat. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited for this conversation.
Well, likewise, and it's great to be able to partner with you and really explore some kind of thoughts about coaching and how coaching can be really most effectively implemented in schools for the benefit of a greater number of people. So, just maybe to start with, I thought it might be worth us for the listeners and the viewers just to have a brief introduction, the two of us, you know, who we are and what we do.
So do you want to start? Sure. My name is Kim Cofino. I am the executive director and founder of ACIS, the Association for the Advancement of Instructional Coaching in International Schools. And I spent the majority of my career working as a coach in international schools until about 10 years ago when I stepped away from full-time teaching and coaching in schools and started my own business. And then in the last few years, I started ACIS with a team of instructional coaches from around the world.
Wow, great. Well, that makes me extremely envious as well as in awe of what you've done. So I'm Ian Henderson. I'm director of The Bridge here at Wellington College in the UK. And I'm co-director of the Festivals of Education around the world. The Bridge is a centre for teaching, learning and research. And one of the things that we've really tried to look at a lot over the last few years is coaching and how we train coaches, how we develop coaches, and so on. I'm coming up at it a little bit more from the perspective of what most people probably view as life coaching, personal coaching, that sort of thing. But very definitely bringing in the whole area of instructional coaching and the way in which we use coaching to improve practice in a classroom and so on. So lucky enough to have been able to work with some really fabulous people and feel like I wouldn't have got anywhere without those fabulous people. So I want to give some thanks to them already. So
absolutely.
So just what's your overall assessment of kind of where coaching sits in the sectors, the parts of the sector in which you work at the moment?
So my ideal kind of vision may not always be what's happening in practice, but it's this space for teachers to be able to explore their own professional growth needs, whatever it is that is tangible, relevant, practical, important for them to serve the needs of the students in their classroom, to help them grow, whatever that next step is for them. And I think it looks different in lots of different settings, but it's the idea of we are supporting educators so that they can better serve the needs of their students. And those educators are the best decision makers about what their students need.
Yeah, I really love that. And the whole element of agency that shines through what you've just said, that it's one of the things that I've really tried to work on in some of the training and the support that we've done, that even for people who feel like they're a bit of a novice in a particular domain, so it could be someone who's a first year teacher, you're still the best person to make decisions about what happens in that classroom because you're the person on the ground. You have
absolutely
you have the presence, you have the connection, you have the relationship, you're building that relationship with people. So I love that. And one other thing that really resonated for me as you said that was a real sense of trust, in the process that, you know, you're not approaching this as, okay, I have something to fix in this person and that is my role here, but I am trusting that by enabling people to engage in the coaching process, they will do better. They will perform better. They will be better in their work. They'll be better in the rest of their life. And that is that trust in the process that I find actually quite, really quite compelling, and maybe some things that are being missed in some schools that I've visited.
I think when teachers know and coaches know that it's about your decision making and, like you say, your agency and your understanding of your own needs, it's such a different mindset than maybe a deficit mindset, fixing people, or we're all trying to make sure we do this thing in this way. It creates such a different culture when, as a teacher, I work so hard to provide personalized learning and agency for my students, and I'm given that same thing. I'm respected in that same way. And when you were talking about that piece, it was making me think how important it is that we recognize and value the experience and expertise that those educators are coming to their role with. But everybody has something they can build on, right? They're adults. They've already had all this life experience. So assuming that we know better as coach, to me, I find that challenging.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting mindset to come into any conversation with, isn't it? That if you've already decided that your expertise is better than any pre-existing wisdom or experience that the other person has, and especially when we're trying to help somebody in their own growth, which could be professional, it could be personal, it could be a mixture. I think, you know, there's something really quite fundamental about believing that we come into the workplace, whatever our work is. It could be an education, it could be outside. We come into that as a whole person. You don't change your values when you walk through the door. You are who you are. And I think you're sending a really interesting message when you say, do you know what? I've already decided that my advice is better than your wisdom.
And I think that happens more when either the culture of the school is set up in such a way, mm-hmm. and that is the expectation for coaching, because that happens as well, right? Or sometimes it happens because, I'm not calling anyone out in particular, but sometimes it happens when we are approaching coaching from the idea of we want to create a mini-me. Like, I got into this position because I do such great things in my classroom, and therefore everyone else should want to be like me. And I like to think of it more, I'm more curious, like, what made you make that decision? How did you decide to, that's different than what, you know, in my head, I could think that's different than what I would have done. But tell me about how you arrived at that decision, because I also see this as always an opportunity for the coach to learn too, or for me to learn as well. Like, why can't I learn from the person that I'm collaborating with in a coaching relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sometimes reminded of the kind of, the odd situation. If you have someone who is a careers advisor who is incredibly directive, who just as soon as a person walks through the door, you know, go and be a doctor, be a lawyer, be an entrepreneur, be this, be that, without actually engaging with that person, it just seems to be the most inappropriate a showering of thoughts and guidance on people. And I think I'd like to add something at this point that you know, maybe as we're starting to discuss this sort of thing, it might sound like there's implicit criticism of people, and I don't feel that at all. I've come across loads and loads of people who are coaching in schools in very different ways, and every single one of them has an incredibly deeply good intentions. They want to help people. And therefore, I think what we're discussing here is nuances of the process rather than, being critical of people. There are many different coaching philosophies. There are different coaching models. There are different coaching belief systems, actually, especially in the range of how directive are you being and how not. But there's not a single person in the whole world that I've met so far who isn't trying to do a good thing. So absolutely. I want to be really clear on that whenever anyone's listening to this. It's much more of an exploration of maybe the strengths and weaknesses. There's one thing that's probably really relevant here from a UK perspective, our UK state sector has really, for the last couple of years now, brought together an entirely new structure for what's called the early career framework. So it's your year of training, your first year of teaching, and 3 years into your teaching career. And a really strongly advised, pushed, and almost mandated the use of instructional coaching to support the early career teachers. And every single early career mentor in every school I've ever worked with is, again, trying to do the best they possibly can for all of those early career teachers. And they're incredibly time poor often. They are really busy deputy heads who've got so many other things to do. And they might have a very large handful, maybe even a very large group of early career teachers to look after. And therefore, there's a bit of a time imperative. They just need to get through the stuff that I really feel for them. They're kind of forced into a coaching mode that has to be a little bit more transmit. It has to be a lot more in terms of giving advice and guidance, because they simply don't have the bandwidth and the time available to have different kinds of conversations. So I really want to respect that and hold up for the admiration of all actually the work they're doing, because it is really powerful. But they have some constraints that I think maybe not everyone in every school has. And I'm curious about your experience in that area.
In general, I think when you're forced to be coaching or to be coached, that gets tough, right? Because we want coaching to be an invitational space, a space where we're entering because we want to be there. Yeah. But I hear the need of new teachers of having support. Obviously, that is essential. In my opinion, I might not label that coaching. I might label it mentoring or something like that, just because I think it's a little bit different. But I think if you're talking about school leaders having responsibilities that involve coaching as part of their work, to me, I think the really important piece of that is just being clear in the labeling, because I think for sure school leaders have the capacity and it's important for them to be able to engage in conversations that are with a coaching mindset or coach-like conversations. But I think for the person across from the table to them to be truly vulnerable, like we want in a coaching conversation, that's really hard when it's your boss and the person who decides whether or not you proceed in your position.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really perceptive point. And one of the things that we talk about a bit when advising schools and how they might develop a coaching culture through their school is you're going to have in... I can't think of a school I visited or had contact with that doesn't have some kind of hierarchical leadership system. You have a head or a principal or executive head or whatever at the top and so on and so on. And very often the most productive coaching relationships don't exist along the same lines. They exist across the organization, sometimes quite an organic way, where somebody works together with someone with whom they've developed a really trusting coaching relationship, which doesn't therefore have the agenda of line management responsibility. And I think it's relatively rare, actually, that you can have the kind of relationship between a line manager and a direct report where you have a really productive coaching, like genuinely deeply coaching relationship between them. Agreed. And often the way that that does happen is when the line manager and the direct report coach each other, because for the direct report to be vulnerable enough and authentic enough for their line manager, they kind of need to see the same in the other way. That has happened quite a lot. But it's and I love what you said and pointed to just a moment ago about this really comes down to just having better conversations.
Yep.
And the more we can be intentional about the kind of better conversations we're trying to have, the better.
And everybody can have those kind of conversations. I was just working on something today, and in my mind, I was thinking a lot about, like, do you want to have better conversations? Do you want to have better relationships? Like, do you want to have more collegial team meetings? Do you want to be able to navigate those tough conversations that we have as teams in a way that feels productive and safe and genuine care for the other person? And I think that's what coaching skills can give us. And absolutely anybody can do that. But I wouldn't label every single conversation where I'm intentionally using my coaching skills as a coaching conversation. Like we can use those skills all the time, everywhere.
Absolutely. I that really rings a lot of bells for me. We talk a lot about, you can be coach-like in any interaction. You can bring your coaching skills. And fundamentally, that comes down to listening better, allowing more space, asking better questions that enable the conversation just to be oiled and to move. And not every conversation that is coach-like is going to be a coaching conversation by any means. And we are, I used to feel really strongly about the labeling about of different types of interaction, different types of conversation that help people, so that we were quite intentional about, well, actually I'm coaching here, I'm mentoring here, I'm advising here, et cetera. But that I think in the sector as a whole, that ship sailed a little bit, that people are calling pretty much all helping conversations as coaching. And that's just, I mean, that's how things are. It maybe makes things a little bit more complicated for people to understand what am I getting when I'm receiving coaching. But I think as for all coaches, if we can be perhaps a bit more intentional about, well, what sort of conversation are we having? So there'll be times when coaches have to have a different kind of conversation with people, more of an advising conversation. Actually, this is where I need to explain something that you've never heard of before, and that's okay too.
Yes.
But it's maybe being a bit more intentional about what mode are we occupying.
I really appreciate when you were talking about you can be more coach-like in any conversation. And I think that it's a really interesting thing to look at and think about what really makes a coaching conversation different from a conversation where you're using coaching skills. I think sometimes we confuse the two and we think every conversation where I'm asking good questions is a coaching conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that nuance is important, especially for leaders who have so many meaningful conversations with people, because that's their job, right? To lead them. And I think it's important for them to know and think about, when am I having a conversation where I'm using coaching skills versus when am I really trying to have a coaching conversation?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just to expand on that a little bit, what would you describe as the features of a conversation that really make it a coaching conversation?
I think it is when the person who's being coached is doing the most talking. They're the one doing the most thinking. The person who's doing the coaching is really focused on their needs, their goals, their capacity, and seeking to understand really where they are at this moment in time to be able to identify what gap they might have to help either ask the right question, offer the right support, encourage some pathway of learning to get them to that next step, because it's about building their independence rather than dependence on you. And I think it's all that attention on the other person that makes it a good coaching conversation versus just a really good, meaningful conversation where you ask questions and you listen respectfully and you pause and paraphrase and do all those coaching skills.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And
is that how you would describe it?
So yes, and I've got some other questions about that as well. So does it, if for a conversation to be a coaching conversation, can it, and this isn't an open question at all, it's a kind of choice, but can it be something that you kind of drift into with someone and then it becomes a coaching conversation, or does it have to be prearranged?
I think you can totally drift into it, but I definitely think that it's worth acknowledging in the moment, like, this feels like it's turning into a coaching conversation. Is that okay with you? Because I think that's part of the agency piece. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's really interesting. I've been working with a school district where the whole school is starting coaching, and the people who are in the coaching position were formerly the learning support. Well, they still do learning support, but they do learning support and coaching now, right? Yeah. And their number one concern, and it took a really long time to kind of work them out of this, was that they were going to try to trick people into coaching. And I'm like, no, that is the opposite of what we want to do. Yes, you may find it's very seamless. You may find there's this moment where you feel like it's switching. You just name it. You just say, this feels like we're moving into coaching. Is that okay with you? Because the last thing you want to do is have people come seeking you out for something else. And then you just ask them a bunch of questions and they're like, why is this person asking me so many questions? Yeah. I came to get a question answered, not to be asked a million questions.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. I think that's really, really important point. The idea of coaching by stealth, which you hear from quite a lot of people, you know. So, I mean, a couple of other questions come up for me there that to expand on that. So the first one is can a conversation be a coaching conversation if you've imposed the goal on the coachee?
I don't think so. I think then that becomes mentoring or some kind of professional growth, one-on-one professional growth. I don't think it's coaching anymore. And that's a really important nuance. I'm really glad you brought that up, because I do think a lot of schools have in their mind that coaching should be connected to whatever the professional learning process is. And sometimes those goals are defined by the teacher, but sometimes they're defined by the school. And then I would say that's just professional learning. We should do professional learning. I'm not saying don't do it. You should absolutely do it. It's just not coaching.
I'm kind of with you on that. I think, you know, you can, there will undoubtedly be certain things that schools have to achieve, or there are targets that are set. Sometimes there are, you know, professional conduct conversations that have to be had. Let's say a teacher is not regularly and without fail registering the class when they come in, or their tutor group or something like that, and there are gaps in the registration.
That's not a coaching
conversation. That's a conversation that has to be had. And I think it's interesting when people try and have those conversations, but by again coming back to this idea of coaching by stealth, it's, you know, I'm trying to get you to give the answer that I want, and make you think you've got agency, which is just, I don't think people respond to that at all. I think they see through it straight away.
That's what I was gonna say. People are way smarter than that. Like, you can tell when somebody's trying to get you to see or say something, and if it's in that situation, sometimes the person might genuinely not even know. And I do wonder, sometimes in education, we're a very human space. We really try to care for people. And sometimes that leads us not to want to tell people bad news. And I'm using bad news very generally here. Like the example gave, like, you're not registering your students. That could be construed as like bad news. You're not doing the thing you're supposed to do. And it becomes really hard for us to just say, whereas to me, that's almost like a hallway, maybe not hallway, but that's like a pop into your classroom. Like, hey, I noticed for the last 5 weeks, you only registered students 3 times. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on there? Like, that is not a attempt, like wondering what might, you know, like, you just have to ask, you know? And I think people do try to coach by stealth a little to not have to have a, it's not even confrontational, but like a direct moment like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree. And another thing that really came up as you were saying that last thing was just before that was how do we need as coaches to create the relationship or partnership with the people we're coaching? What are the things that we need to be really clear on and to design that relationship?
For me, I think the most important thing is working out whatever needs to happen for them to trust you. And that can look a lot of different ways. It can be being visible, like physically, you know, not in their face, but in their space, you know, in their periphery, and checking in and saying hello, whatever that needs to be. It can be really noticing. I think a thing that is nice to do is really noticing strengths and being very cognizant of what this person's strengths are and letting them know that you know what their strengths are and taking genuine interest in what it is that kind of drives them for whatever, whether it's in their growth goal or with their students, whatever it is, because you can't have a coaching conversation where you don't know the other person, and you knowing the other person is what helps them build trust in you, because you're caring about them, you're paying attention to them, you're interested in them. So I think it probably looks different in most cases, but it's about getting to know the other person and building that trust so they feel safe to be vulnerable with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that element of trust is really crucial. And it's interesting when you look at different coaching models and different training regimes and what have you, there's always something that's really fundamental about that. Whether it's, you know, I train with CTI and they call it designing the alliance. You intentionally create that. And I know, you know, in the professional coaching world, contracting is a non-negotiable. You have to create that agreement between you and your coaches, and I think that there's a really crucial element there. So what we talk about creating a coaching agreement or a partnership agreement, which is fundamentally an open discussion between two people that's based on the question, if this is going to be the best coaching relationship it could be, how do we need to be with each other? So it's very much a case of co-creating a, it's like a code of conduct or ethics that's based around being. So it's not, what are we going to do? Well, I'm going to turn up on time or whatever. It's about being, the ways of being. And I think those ways of being, when you establish those and what they mean to each other, that creates a mutual understanding and trust that enables you to point back to those things and say, hey, you know, we need a bit more of that. We need a bit more honesty, or we need a bit more openness, or whatever it is that you've already agreed on. That can be really powerful in terms of underpinning a really foundational structure and and basis on which the coaching relationship can be really productive.
And that comes back to everybody understanding in this relationship, yeah, why we're here and what we're doing and yeah, what we hope to get out of this time together. Because I think that's another, yeah, when you were talking about coaching by stealth, you were talking, I think, more about like leaders coaching by stealth. But I think also there's like coaching by stealth as like a whole school kind of perspective, yeah, like we'll just slide into this. But actually it's naming things and talking about things and making sure we understand what the expectations are. Yeah. That clarity allows me to engage, yeah, in this work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you should mention that, because I've been into one or two schools that have, and they've said, oh yeah, we it's great. We love coaching. We have a really good coaching culture. You should come and see. So I go there and I visit. And when you see it, you see that they don't really have what I would call a culture of coaching. They have a culture of asking leading questions until they get the answer they want.
Yes.
And I've termed that manipulative coercion, which is probably a bit harsh. It's maybe bullying is another way to talk about. I don't know. I have to stress those schools are pretty rare, and again, I'd go back to what I said earlier, that even in those schools, the people who are doing that, that they are trying to do a good thing. They're trying to help their people. They're trying to grow their people. They just maybe, I think for me, maybe others would disagree, but I think they've slightly missed the point that. One of the really foundational parts of coaching is building agency. It's building self-propulsion. It's building self-awareness. It's building self-regulation. And ultimately, you know, when I trained as a coach, one of the things that stuck in the training for me was part of your goal as a coach should be to make yourself redundant.
Yep.
You know, because if you're building dependence on you, then what you're actually doing is building a lack of dependence and a learned helplessness in the person that you're helping.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a really fundamental part of it for me. I'm wondering what resonates for you there.
I totally, what you just said, building the independence of the coaching partner so that they don't need you anymore, that is the highest compliment. And I, as you were saying that, I was thinking, I had a client I've been working with for a while who's like, Kim, I'm not going to coach with you this year. And I was like, yes, like you did it. Like, we got you to the point that you needed to be to feel, yeah, like you could do that on your own. And that is, yeah, the, like, that's the greatest gift, right? That you are helping someone reach and see their, yeah, own true potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also really appreciated, you said something about the asking leading questions and hope they get to the right answer. I think sometimes that happens maybe because we don't have the time to engage, yeah, in the nuance of what we need, yeah, to be doing here. And it's sometimes coaching is presented as simple as, if, yeah, you ask these questions, yeah, you will be coaching. And I know, yeah, that work is always done with good intentions, like we're talking, yeah, about, but if, yeah, yeah, it's not applied with the thoughtfulness of like, well, yeah, why are you asking these questions? What is the, yeah, purpose behind this? What, yeah, do you hope to, yeah, achieve? Just, yeah, asking a series of questions is not ever going to end up being coaching. It's just going to get, yeah, infuriating for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think there is a tendency in training, you see it a lot, where a sort of relatively formulaic series of questions is presented as a coaching model. And as if you go through these, then yeah, so on. And we shifted our training some time ago now, so that we do not give a crib sheet of questions at all. My goal when I train people, and it's the same for James Ellis, who we work really closely with and has become a really close ally, we're trying to get people to be able to coach by being responsive and present in the moment. And by listening, there's the stimulus for the next question.
Exactly, that, yes.
Yeah. So I think there's something, you know, really crucial there. And also remind me of a couple of things that's really, it's partly about the genesis of coaching for me. So the very first class I taught was the cleverest class I've ever taught in my whole life. And I worked out on Wednesday of the first week. This is my first year teaching. Oh, I'm like, God, probably out of PGCE. I just thought, I can't pretend I've got all the answers here, because they're way too clever for me. And they'll just find me out. So I have to learn to ask questions, yep, because otherwise I've got nowhere to go. And also, you know, to be honest, when I don't know, rather than trying to bluff my way through. And And, you know, that was a fairly kind of serendipitous moment for me, because it enabled me to explore an aspect of the relationship that I had in the classroom and the mode that I adopted in the classroom that I think actually stayed with me a lot. And funnily enough, two of those young people who were wonderfully pleasant people to be in the classroom with, but also frighteningly clever, they both become world leaders in their fields. And that's a really cool thing. And the second thing, I set up the golf program here at Wellington, and golf's a passion of mine, and coaching golf. Now, coaching golf traditionally has been a very much about instruction. It's like the expert knows all the stuff, and the person that they're teaching doesn't know the stuff. And golf's super complicated, so the only thing you can do is be quite directive in terms of telling people what to do. And yet, at the same time, that misses something, because in golf, there's no sport where you can have less help in competition than golf. If you receive any assistance of any sort, even surreptitious, if your coach or instructor was in the gallery of a tournament and they just sort of did that, which was a kind of signal to say, you know, keep your head down or whatever it might be, whatever the subtle cue is, that's disqualification, instant disqualification. So, I felt, you know, in terms of the way that I taught golf, a massive part was, well, how can I get young people to own what they do and not be dependent on somebody else? Especially because they're going to leave us at 18 anyway. Like, if they could come to us, and they can go through the golf program, they're going to leave school. If I've made them in any way dependent on me or on any other people who are helping them during their time at school, I have absolutely failed them. So therefore I brought very much a coaching approach to golf as much as I could. Of course, there were moments when you might demonstrate something or you might need to explain something. It's not all coaching, but actually I had to be really coach-like in the majority of what I was doing, because my ultimate goal is to, how can I help you own this so that you can go off to a tournament and you can self-regulate and you can self-manage and so on. So those two things really kind of jumped out when you said the last thing.
I love that you brought up golf. I know we've talked about this before. I compete in a sport called powerlifting, and it's similar. You could definitely yell commands and cues to people in the powerlifting competition, but you're on your own, right? There's no team or anything around you.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the way that you're describing the way that you're teaching or coaching golf, because my powerlifting coach also has that same mentality. And I feel like all the people I coached, every time she does a coaching thing with me and I'm like, oh, just tell me the answer. But I know when she asks me the question that the next time I'm in that situation, because I train, she is based in New Zealand, I'm based in Thailand. The next time I train, I will make a better decision, because whatever I did the last time, she asked me some kind of question about it. I had to think about it. I reflected on what my choice was. And I thought to myself, next time I'm in this situation, I'm going to do this. And I think that's what we're talking about throughout this whole conversation, is this building independence and building the capacity of the other person. You can do that in so many different areas of life, not just like in our schools, but also in sports.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of essentially human relationship that comes from that. I think there's a lot of talk at the moment about how education is changing and AI this and automated learning that and all of the other things. I think there's something really fundamental about the human to human interaction that is coaching, that is hugely powerful. And at the same time, when you look at all of the massive volume of education research that's out there, they're so incredibly varied. You can almost find an example of a piece of research to back up any assertion that you have. It might not be particularly robust research, but there's going to be a piece of research out there. And it feels to me like, therefore, because there's such a range of different contexts and ideas and so on, and research methodologies, there's almost nothing that all educational researchers agree on.
Yeah.
Except that thinking hard causes learning. That seems to be pretty much universal. When people think hard, you've heard the residue of hard, that learning is the residue of hard thought, and learning is what's left over when you've been thinking hard, all of these kind of explanations. And it strikes me the best way to help people think is to ask them.
Absolutely.
which really kind of brings, for me, brings coaching right to the fore of what needs to be included in modern education as education grows and evolves. We need to bring the skills of coaching into those human interactions much more than we currently do in order to make sure that we make people think. We know from, it barely needs any research, it's pretty much intuitive, but we definitely know from recent research that if you outsource thinking to AI, you get a cognitive debt that gets bigger and bigger over time. And that's going to be the temptation and perhaps the tendency for lots of people, that I'm going to get the AI to do the thinking for me. Now, getting AI to do all of the drudgery, all of the kind of repetitive work that might be research and summarizing and analyzing, that sort of thing, fine. AI is brilliant at that. AI is terrible at thinking, and it's terrible at making decisions. I think that there's something there for me. As we embark on an era where hopefully the kind of basic purpose, the fundamental point of education is going to be reestablished as we grow people, and our goal is to help people live a flourishing life and to go into the world and live a flourishing life. It feels to me like coaching is an essential part of that. And I wonder what happens to you as I say that.
I couldn't agree more. I'm like super excited. That is exact. Yes, all of that. And I think I have so many thoughts. So my first thought is, I think when you mentioned AI, my thought that came to mind when you were talking about that is, I feel like there's an ever increasing pressure to do more with less, and that's giving us less time to think. And to me, I think that makes coaching even more important, because we need more opportunities to slow down. We need more opportunities to reflect. We need more opportunities to process, instead of allowing ourselves to just be bowled over by the tsunami of expectations that now AI is here, you can do 10 times more things than you used to do before. That's the wrong message to take away from that. And then you're talking about human being, allowing ourselves to flourish and being human-centered and finding those, human ways of being with each other. I think that and this is going to sound super woo-woo, sorry, here it comes. When we're looking for like a meaningful life, it is that feeling of belonging, of doing something that's important to you, doing something that makes a difference. And I think most, if not all, educators are in education for that very reason. And if we can't create a space where I feel like I belong because you care, you listen, you make space for me, my growth is as important as somebody else's, then what am I doing here? Because it's certainly not for the pay. It's certainly not for the glory. You know what I mean? I'm here because it's meaningful to me. And the way we make things meaningful is by feeling like we belong, feeling like we're part of this community that cares and wants to do better. And I think coaching is the key for that.
I absolutely agree with that, and I love that you said that. And the issues that the sector has as a whole, and this is as evident in any country that I've engaged with people, I think, is that we are losing good teachers. The education is losing good people, and it's losing good people. And exit surveys and other bits of research show pretty much a consistent picture across all of those countries that are losing people. And it's about a lack of agency. It's about a deprofessionalization or deintellectualization of the profession. It's about a lack of purpose. It can be about toxic leadership. It can be about workload, but both of which kind of contribute to those other things. But in very few cases is it, I don't earn enough money. That is not to be ignored, because teachers are often not as well paid as perhaps they really ought to be. But ultimately, all of those things are a purpose. And that we talk about human flourishing being the purpose of education, like we grow people. If the adults don't flourish, how can the young people flourish? A big focus for us at the moment is how we can help reimagine teacher education. And by that, I don't mean just initial teacher education. I mean the ongoing growth of teachers through their career, right up to retirement. If we can help do that in a way which enables people to flourish and find meaning and purpose and fulfillment in what they do, then you're going to retain more good people.
Yes.
And of course, some people will leave teaching because it's not the right thing for them. That's okay. Not everyone has to get the perfect career decision first time round.
Right.
But the more you do this, the more you've got a chance that the right people come into teaching, stay in teaching, are fulfilled by teaching, and therefore create an education system where more young people can flourish.
Yes. And I think one of the things that keeps us stuck a little bit in education is, and I'm not saying this is wrong, I'm just saying there maybe we need to expand our thinking a little bit, is we are so focused on what we're doing for students that we really don't pay enough attention to the adults. And mm-hmm. what you are talking about is exactly what we need to just expand a tiny little bit in our minds. I'm not saying we aren't there for students. I know that we're there for students. But if we don't pay attention to the adults in the room, they're not going to be able to give what is needed to those students in the first place. And so exactly. all the things we know that are good for students, we can do those things for adults too. And that will allow exactly what you're talking about, this flourishing, wanting to stay, teacher retention, teacher engagement, you know, increased belonging, all of these things. We both think that coaching is the secret.
Absolutely.
The not so secret secret.
But I love that you said that. And it reminds me of speaking to a head a long, long time ago when I first started teaching, who said, being a head's not that difficult. All I have to do is appoint good people and keep them happy. A fairly simplistic boiling down of what we've been talking about. But ultimately, if you can attract the right people into the profession in terms of their values are ideally suited to teaching, to education in general, and you make sure that they feel fulfilled, they feel that they belong, they feel connected, they have that is everything we've been talking about, then maybe that is a big part of it. Well, we've solved all the problems of the world so far, Kev.
Done.
Any more?
I think we're good. We should stop while we're ahead.
Great. Well, it's been fabulous to talk to you, as always.
Thank you.
Maybe there's something worth reprising here in a few months' time, maybe. See how far things might have moved in that time. But thank you so much for coming together and enabling us to have this, what's been a really invigorating conversation for me.
Thank you. Me too. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you. Please leave a comment, ask a question, and like, follow, and subscribe to hear more from Bridge Ed. You can also follow The Bridge on LinkedIn, and you can find out more information on our website at thebridge.wellingtoncollege.org.uk. Until next time.